Chapter 5. She was first aware of light. It poured through the plex windows in lava-like radiance, white and steaming light, making her undershirt stick to her ribs with sweat. In the tiny black confines of the shuttle, the light took up all the space with its irradiating corneal presence, and Harrowhark cried out as though she were dying from it, and then was tremendously self-conscious and discombobulated.
"Please," a voice was saying. "Please, my Lady Harrowhark, be peaceful. What can I do for you? What must be done?"
Ortus was almost bigger than the light, filling up the black and steel spaces of the passenger seats as much as the radiance did. Harrow realized, smarting, that his expression was that of a man who considered her a source of embarrassment. Somewhere down the years, she had come to understand that Ortus Nigenad, that perfect modern ninth cavalier, perfectly shaved head, perfectly appropriate paint, perfectly grim solemnity, perfect body of two cabinets nailed together, perfect ability to carry 6 kilos of bone, considered her a slightly sorry object. How sorry an actual object, he could not possibly conceive. "Am I making the sign?" she managed. "Am I giving you the signal? No? Then I will remind you that anything else is none of your business, and hope I do not have to remind you twice." He was not sweating as she was, but those lashes were damp from the light.
"As you see fit, my lady," he said.
His rapier was not belted at his hip. He carried it over his lap, as though it was someone else's baby. Harrow was pleased, dimly, to see that for his man gauche, he carried his pannier, despite Iglamine cutting up so rough at the idea. That felt appropriate. She had always desired a helpmeet, not a circus performer. "Where are we?" Harrow added, in another sudden welter of nervousness. "I thought, perhaps..."
"We must be 400 kilometers above the surface now," he said, mistaking her question. "They are securing our clearance to land. We shall leave orbit soon, I trust."
Harrowhark rose from the placket of house dirt she had been sitting on, which held the merest suggestion of Thanagy at this point anyway, and she crossed to where the light was coming in. At the last moment, she remembered what she had brought with her and drew a piece of thick voile from within her sacramental vestments. She tied it around her head and pulled up her hood, which still smelled of the salts that Crux had so carefully packed it away with, that herbaceous, acrid, homelike smell, the one that made her eyes smart again with familiarity. Then she looked through the plexiform window. From space, the house of the first resembled a box of tumbled jewels. Haloed in white, its blues deep and brilliant and oxidized, a planet of water, close enough to the fiery gyre of Dominicus that the water was not allowed to freeze yet, nor so close that it burnt away. Insubstantial and ever-shifting ocean, as far as the reddened eye could see. Her smarting eyes fell upon a tiny jumble of squares, ringed around a central greyish smudge. She turned back to her seat and found herself saying restlessly, "At times now I forget. I thought I was dreaming, perhaps."
"I find it perfectly normal, my lady," he said. "Perhaps I am right in perceiving that you thought it might surprise me, your being with the infirmity of..."
When she looked at him, he immediately seemed to find the rattle and thump of the shuttle's mechanisms overpowering and began a traditional Ortus shutdown.
"Your so-called... the frailty..."
"Nigenad, use your words."
"The insanity,"
said her companion. Her shoulders relaxed a fraction. He mistook her rising relief for an emotion he ought to have known she never felt. Ortus said, distracted,
"The only surprise really being in it expressing this way, rather than... No, I am not surprised, Lady Harrowhark. Perhaps you may yet have cause to find it useful.
Useful? Autus cleared his throat. This engendered many emotions in her. Autus Nigenad cleared his throat with the import of a sword being slid from a scabbard or knuckle bones jostling in the pocket of a locked tomb necromancer, but it was too late, as he was already declaiming.
Then did the dire bone frenzy fall upon Nonius, the mightiest arm of the ninth and its bulwark. Spasmed his veins with the death lust, his great heart roared like a black iron furnace, hungry for corpses.
Ah, said Harrowhark. Yes, book 16. And, presently, I think bone frenzy might be a term open to coarse misinterpretation, personally. Better death by the drawn sword and better the death of the knucklebone. There was only one trigger to drive Autus Nigenad so comprehensively berserk, and she had forgotten that it was not a trigger to use lightly. Autus primly said he thought that nobody who read the Noniad would be the sort of churl who misread a simple and evocative collocation like bone frenzy. He went on to suggest that such a person probably didn't even read in the first place, and would be more inclined to trifle with prurient magazines or pamphlets than to bother themselves with a complex epic such as the Noniad. He said that he wouldn't want such a person to read his poetry anyway.
At least now I possess the time to finish it, he added a little moodily, but apparently satisfied with that thought.
This surprised her only in that it was so obviously expressed. She did not voice what she thought, that even if he was right, even if the last thing Harrow wanted was for Autus to get in the way as she studied the paths of Lictorhood, to become a finger and a gesture, to take the only divine path that had ever opened for her in order to save her house from a destruction she herself had inflicted, it didn't behoove him to say as much. She hoped he never finished it. She hoped there was never world enough or time. Harrowhark had always thought Matthias Nonius, legendary cavalier of her house, sounded like an absolute horse's ass.
Harrowhark, said her cavalier, I wish to ask you a question.
He did not sound timid now. His mood had shifted to a more typical restrained sadness, though she thought perhaps there was something else within it. Harrow took a moment to study his face. Autus would be a good rest cure, should the homesickness get too acute. He had classical ninth eyes, a tintless shade, very close to true black, sharply ringed around the iris, very like her own. Autus said a little restlessly,
What do you think it is like to be a lictor? Do you think it is a central tragedy to them, their great age, their timelessness?
She was surprised again. Nigenad, what would be the tragedy in living for a myriad? 10,000 years to learn everything there is to know, to read everything that has ever been written, to study without fear of premature end or reckoning. What is the tragedy of time?
Time can render one impotent beyond meaning, said Autus unexpectedly.
He made his eyes downcast again and said,
I would not expect you to be crushed by the weight of that particular comprehension, reverend daughter.
He might as well have said,
You are a baby of 17, and I am an adult of 35.
She regretted, not for the first time, not going for broke and taking Iglamine. Perhaps there would have been something in rocking up to the first house with an octogenarian in tow, a sort of wild and confident fuck you. Oh, your cavaliers are young, and they fight. How classic, so jejune. But that would not have been the wild and confident fuck you of the ninth house. The Ninth House character, she was forced to admit, had always been low on wild and confident fucks. "Nigonad," she said, "I am what I am, and I am 17, yet I assure you that I contain multitudes."
"I am fully aware of that, my lady," said Ortus,
which was perfectly correct of him to say. But Harrow somehow did not like the way he said it. "They are taking too long to vet us," she said, and stood, and restlessly pulled down the plexiform barrier between them and the empty cockpit. She was about to press her fingers to the communication button to ask the pilot what the holdup was and how he was to explain it, but she saw something she either had not seen before or that had suddenly appeared upon one of the padded seats. It was a piece of flimsy. She took it and withdrew into the bleeding light of the passenger hold. She could feel Ortiz's eyes upon her as she turned the piece of flimsy over. It was coloured all over with thin blue ink, scribbled so hard that the termination of each letter pushed holes into the surface, and it read, "The eggs you gave me all died, and you lied to me." She gave it to her cavalier. The shuttle seemed totally quiet now. No mechanism ground, no pipe gurgled. The light was very still and white, and she no longer felt it moving. He scanned over the piece of flimsy, frontward, then flipped it over to scan it backward. He cleared his throat. Harrow Hark found herself flinching and nearly tore herself to pieces for it, and he said,
"It's blank, my lady."
"Fuck," said Harrow.